You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Lake Superior to Lake Michigan. This is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. You are listening to Daybreak. And hey, Brian, we have some fancy new social media sites that we would like people to go check out over on Instagram and over on Facebook. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. That's what you should be. There's some like underscores and things like that, but just do a search.
Yeah, good luck. Let's not get into that. We got to turn to a new lawsuit. Yeah. It seems every day there's a new lawsuit against the Trump administration. A coalition of health and environmental groups, including some from Wisconsin, sued the EPA Wednesday, challenging the rescinding of a scientific finding that has been the central basis for U.S. actions to regulate greenhouse gas emissions and fight climate change. To give us some background on that, Amy Berrio joins us. She's communications director for Clean Wisconsin. She's host of the Defender Project, and she's working on Clean Wisconsin's lawsuit against the EPA. Amy, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. So let's get to the nuts and bolts of the lawsuit. What are the claims in this lawsuit?
I mean, it's pretty clear that the EPA has no scientific or legal basis to rescind the endangerment finding. So basically, the endangerment finding came out of a 2007 Supreme Court decision, U.S. Supreme Court, Massachusetts versus EPA. And that finding basically said that the EPA, your mission in federal statute is to protect public health. And under the Clean Air Act, if greenhouse gases are a danger to public health, then you have a responsibility to set regulations and enforce those regulations to protect people. And so they gave the EPA the marching orders, okay, go do some scientific studies and figure out, do these greenhouse gases harm public health? And that is what the 2009 endangerment finding is. It is that scientific analysis and finding that yes, greenhouse gases hurt public health. So this has all been litigated, it's all been decided, it's all been researched, and in fact, you know, if you think back on what we've experienced here in Wisconsin since 2009, you can see that there's just more and more and more evidence that these greenhouse gases are hurting us. You know, we've seen an explosion in tick-borne illnesses. I think a quadrupled number of Lyme disease cases over the past 20 years. We've seen a threefold increase in severe storms that caused more than $1 billion in damage here in Wisconsin since 1980. And we've all experienced that toxic wildfire smoke that we've had the past few summers. In some cases, Wisconsin has had the worst air quality in the country and in the world in some moments during our past summers. So this kind of notion that, oh, never mind, these greenhouse gases are just fine and they're not harming us, I think we all know that that's just not true.
So, Amy, the Trump administration is actually arguing right now that the endangerment finding is leading to costly regulations that are hurting businesses and consumers. How does Clean Wisconsin respond to those claims?
I think it's frustrating because that's always the line that you get when you hear about an environmental regulation and the forces that are pushing back against it. Well, this is going to cost us too much money. But what we see here in Wisconsin and all across the country is there are health costs associated with pollution. Certainly, I just mentioned storms at $1 billion apiece. We know that we're paying costs every day, health costs, cleanup costs, you know, tick prevention costs. But this is a lazy way to frame the issue to say, well, you know, wow, that coal plant might have to put some pollution controls on it, and that might cost the, you know, coal plant, powers that be money, so we just shouldn't do it, ignores all of the impacts that come from people being exposed to that pollution.
Amy Berrio is our guest. She's communications director for Clean Wisconsin. She also hosts the Defender podcast, and she is helping Clean Wisconsin in the lawsuit against the Trump EPA. Amy, who are the other plaintiffs in this case, and how did this lawsuit come together?
Oh, it's a long list of plaintiffs. I'm just going to pull it up because we're joining like a coalition of groups. We're the only one in Wisconsin, but it's, you know, the American Public Health Association, the American Lung Association, Alliance of Nurses for a Healthy Environment. So you can see that these are public health groups because there is wide acknowledgement that this is a public health issue. Plus, you know, a number of environmental groups, the Clean Air Council, Friends of the Earth, Physicians for Social Responsibility. You know, so this is a, I think if we acknowledge that it's a wide variety of groups, we can really see what the harms are of rolling this back. The EPA had signaled that it was coming, so we were ready. Just a couple of days after the repeal, we filed suit. And I imagine that other groups will file suit as well. Groups have 30 days from the publication of that rule to announce legal action and to file. And so we're still in that 30-day period. So, but again, I think what we have to realize is the EPA's mission is to protect public health. That is what is set forth in federal statute. That is why it exists as an agency. It's not as, you know, the new EPA administrator might say, to make the United States the leader in AI. That has nothing to do with the EPA's mission. Its mission is not to prop up coal, oil, and gas industries. That's not the mission. The mission is to protect public health. No matter what the Trump administration says or the EPA administrator says about, you know, unleashing the power of American business, if you look at what the EPA is supposed to do, there is no legal basis for it to take the action it's taken.
The administration has called this one of the largest deregulatory actions in U.S. history. And obviously groups like Clean Wisconsin call it the biggest attack on federal climate authority. You've mentioned some of the increases that we've seen and some of the impacts we've already started to see even under the endangerment finding. But what if we lose these regulations completely, Amy, what does that look like for a state like Wisconsin?
Well, we have to keep in mind that this is the EPA's main tool for doing something about climate change. And I think that's important to understand. If you take that away, then what are we doing? You know, this is the biggest public health crisis that we have ever faced. And to take away the tool for the government to react to that and to start taking steps to control that and to prevent harm, then that's a really extremely concerning thing. And this, you know, is part of a big picture of rollbacks and really failing to protect public health on a number of levels. So if you're worried about PFAS forever chemicals, well, those standards that got passed by the EPA a few years ago are now in the process of being repealed. If you're worried about mercury coming from power plants or getting into the fish you eat, well, the Trump administration is getting ready to roll back the mercury and air toxic standards that were tightened just a few years ago. So if you're worried about any of these things that you're exposed to, pesticides, that's been in the news lately, that a new pesticide has been allowed to come, or not new, but a concerning pesticide has been allowed to come on the market. You know, there's a whole host of this kind of action that's been happening. It's a list that's almost too long for me to name. I'd have to go, you know, spend several days putting it together. But we are really seeing this happen on all fronts. And I think, you know, we realize that when the EPA administrator, Lee Zeldin, came out as soon as he was confirmed and said, okay, the EPA, this is what we got to do. We got to, you know, unleash the power of business and the auto industry in the United States. And we have to make the United States the capital of AI. And that is so far from what the EPA is supposed to do. Nobody wants more mercury in their air. Nobody wants more greenhouse gases. Nobody wants more storms and toxic smoke. Not one person. There is nobody who is saying, please give me more pollution. And I think we all have to understand that that's what we're getting.
Amy, I want to go back to something you said at the beginning of our conversation in case somebody's just joining us. And forgive me if we're rehashing a little bit, but you mentioned this has all been adjudicated before. all of this has been investigated, researched, ruled on by the courts. What possible footing can the Trump administration have to fight this lawsuit?
Yeah, so I mentioned that 2007 Supreme Court decision. Right. So that was the law of the land. Yeah, should be it. And then the EPA doing its due diligence, putting together a real thorough scientific finding, the endangerment finding, that yes, greenhouse gases are a danger to us, to people. So there is certainly no scientific basis, no legal basis for any of this to be happening. But I don't think that that is what the concern is of the Trump administration. I think it's let's go ahead and get rid of all this stuff and then see how far we can take it. And we've seen that in a number of ways from the Trump administration. So, you know, in our minds, this case should not move forward. If anybody takes a look at it on its face, you know, we feel like that they certainly should rule that the endangerment finding will need to stand.
We're talking with Amy Berrio. She's the communications director for Clean Wisconsin. She also hosts the Defender podcast. She's part of helping with this lawsuit against the Trump EPA. CleanWisconsin.org to check out some of the work that they're doing over there. If we take a look at this on mostly an everyday scale, too, of what this can mean, we're talking basically eliminating standards for cars and trucks. We've seen a lot of progress in, you know, electric vehicles in this country. What could it mean for on those practical standards of cars, trucks? We look at power plants, the gas, oil companies, data centers moving into Wisconsin. How does all of that play with this rollback of these regulations?
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to talk about your everyday experiences, well, first of all, most car and truck makers in this moment have implemented these standards already. Again, this is not new stuff, but what you'll see is now, particularly new power plants that are being constructed and maybe new cars that come on the market, don't have to worry about meeting these kinds of emission standards. And that's should be really concerning because, for example, with cars and trucks, some of these greenhouse gases that are emitted come with other types of pollutants or themselves can mix with other types of pollutants and cause ground level ozone, for example. And southeastern Wisconsin is already in non-attainment for ozone in this part of the state for federal ozone regulations. So that means, you know, ground level ozone, if you've got asthma, you're really aware of what that means for your health. There will be days when you can't go outside if we're in a bad ozone level, especially in the hot days of the summer. So there will be an immediate impact on public health as some of these protections start falling away. Again, there's just, as I say this all the time, I feel like nobody's saying, please give me more car exhaust. Please give me more of that pollution. Let me have more days when I can't go outside in the summer in Wisconsin. But that's what you're going to see. And again, I think there's a recognition that technology is moving past this moment. You know, burning coal is not something anybody wants to do anymore. Having cars and trucks that are making it terrible to go outside is not something people want anymore. So this isn't responding to what people are asking for. It's really responding to what coal, oil, and gas companies are asking for.
Yeah, if you're old enough like me to remember before all the emissions regulations went in on cars and trucks, it wasn't pleasant. Amy Berrio is the communications director for Clean Wisconsin. She hosts the Defender podcast, and she's working with Clean Wisconsin on the lawsuit against the EPA. CleanWisconsin.org is the website. Amy, thank you for being here this morning. Have a wonderful weekend. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It's 8:19 right now. Coming up, we've got a little follow-up to a story we did yesterday. I'm very excited about this. Maybe involves one of your favorite burger places.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. And hey, happy Friday. We officially made it to the end of a work
Yeehaw.
Week. It's always good to say that, isn't it, in this day and age?
It really is. And you look ahead and you go, all right, you know, maybe maybe over the weekend we could take a little break from some of the craziness. We won't. We'll still be on it. So when we talk again on Monday morning, we'll
be more crazy.
We'll be knee deep in the hoopla, as the kids used to say. I don't know what kid said that, but some kid.
What?
What song? Starship said that. They were knee deep in the hoopla. Used to be Jefferson Airplane, then there were Jefferson Starship, then they were just Starship. Starship actually was knee deep in the hoopla.
Yeah.
And there's your there's your abstract musical reference for the day. You're welcome. Send all your cards and letters to Jamie.
I'm learning.
We need those once in a while. But don't send your cards and letters to me. I get enough of those things. Kidding. I'll always take your mail.
Will you?
Well, it's got to be nice mail. I've gotten my share of not-so-nice mail over the last few
days. Hey, you got a voicemail yesterday, yesterday.
This is exciting.
If you were with us yesterday, it is exciting. Yesterday, we were telling you that Burger King had decided to give out their CEO's phone number so you could call and leave him a message and either compliment or complain or have suggestions, and allegedly they would get back to you. And we were skeptical, I'm not going to lie.
Right.
So on the air, we called, and Jamie and I left a nice message.
Yes.
And Jamie, all of a sudden, we get the show gets a message from you in the afternoon.
Yes. So our lovely executive assistant here at Civic Media, Megan, she sends me a message while I was sitting at home working, and she says, hey, you got a message from a guy named Tom at Burger King? And she attaches the message. And so Tom Curtis is the CEO of Burger King, and we left him a very nice voicemail explaining who we are, what we were doing. And he actually responded. And we have that voicemail that we want to play for you right now. So this is cut 5. No, he didn't address some of our concerns.
Oh, my tortilla concern was left unaddressed. If you missed it, first of all, I complimented the Whopper, which we have a follow-up story on that as well. But the Royal Wraps, the Crunch Wraps, I said the tortilla is too big for the amount of chicken in there. And I understand it's a low-priced item, you're not going to put a ton of chicken, but then make the wrap a little smaller so it seems more bountiful.
Yes, that makes total sense. And I'll go way back to the days of longing for the chicken Whopper. I'm probably never getting my wish ever again. But, I'll keep asking. If Tom's going to keep giving me his phone number, I might keep asking.
I wonder, because that's obviously he's got that... I'm sure they set aside a few minutes every day for him to return some calls. And if you don't get the call, at least he had our names. They did know who the call came from.
Right.
And okay, I'm surprised we got that, which was terrific. I wonder what would the difference have been had you answered the phone. If he would have gotten into a conversation with
perhaps.
And then you wonder how long he'll put up with some Yahoo going, and I had a tomato one time, Tom, and it had a lot of green. And listen, I like a fried green tomato, but I don't like a green tomato on my Whopper. It's a little too chewy. I like my Whopper tomatoes very ripe so that I can bite right through them, and they kind of just ooze in with the other condiments. You know what I'm saying, Tom? Can we make a check? Is there any way you can only buy really ripe tomatoes?
So this is about where Tom starts going, oh, yes. I'm going to hear your complaints. Yes, I understand. I'm sorry that happened to you. Yes, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Click. That's what you get about that moment in time.
That's when he's looking at his assistant just with rage in his eyes.
Right.
Who called the tomato guy?
Because those happen as well. But the nice part is Burger King is actually listening. They are actually, they want your thoughts. They want your suggestions. So 305-874-0520 if you want to call and complain about your two green tomato on your Whopper as well. 305-874-0520. But they are actually listening because this is where the next story regarding Burger King comes in. This is a great story as well because obviously they're home of the Whopper, Brian, which is one of your favorites.
They are home of the Whopper. That's why I go to Burger King to get the Whopper. And thankfully, Burger King has changed their fry recipe, so I'm good with that too.
Okay.
And they make a nice onion ring. But
nice.
So the Whopper's been basically the same for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now because of you, American burger eaters, myself included, they've listened to our complaints, which I didn't realize was a complaint, but some people are upset. They're making subtle changes to the Whopper. Subtle is the key word, but they will be noticeable to the Whopper. So a lot of people, Jamie, I don't know if this happened with the chicken Whopper. People would say they were too mushed.
No.
You know, because they're just wrapped in paper. They're mushed.
No, they were good. This is at the time when this is 20-some years ago, so they still came in a nice box, right? They didn't really have the
going
paper,
back
right?
To that.
Okay, all right. Now, see,
going
I like
back
this.
To the box.
I like
back
this.
To the box for the Whopper. A little bit more of a premium bun.
Oh.
And a creamier mayonnaise.
Oh.
Which I didn't, and they said franchisees were suggesting a creamier mayonnaise. It seems like a higher-end compliment to the other condiments. Back when I was a big fatty, I used to order extra mayo on my Whoppers. And man, I didn't mind that it was, I thought it was creamy because it's spread around. But so they're doing that. And
the more it drizzles, the better it is, right? The more it's down the front of your shirt, the better it is.
Squirt right out there.
Yes, yes. Ketchup, mayo, all over, everything. That's the better it is.
I love
it
when it blends together like that. So, yeah, they're going to revamp the burger rolls. They're going to put in the new mayonnaise. The beef patty, though, is staying exactly the same.
That's the important part.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Because you don't want the meat in the inside to change, because restaurants do this all the time and there is a noticeable difference. They tell you there's not, but there is a noticeable difference when they do that.
And that's the key to the Whopper. You taste the meat.
Right.
And that, you know, Parker.
I know.
But the Whopper is, I thought the Whopper was perfect as it was. But we'll see. Now I'm going to have to
try
one with the
new bun. Nobody wants a smushy burger. Nobody wants a smushy burger, Brian.
But if you're driving and eating it, if it's
you
mushed
have to
a little
have
bit,
something.
It makes it much more convenient.
Yes. See, they want you to have much an experience more. In the restaurant. That's what that amounts to.
All right. Well.
It's 8:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We go from hamburgers to ranked voting in open primaries next on the Civic Media Network.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. Brian, I got to say, I'm super excited for this next conversation.
I am too, and it's something that in doing research, yes, I said it again, twice in one show, Jamie, it's obvious that I'm doing a lot of research.
Rubbing off
I love it too, because I did a lot of research on this topic yesterday, and I don't understand why it's not a thing. Because listen, everybody agrees, I think, that our political system is broken. But the question is it really broken, or is it just functioning the way it was designed to function? If you've ever looked down at your ballot and you held your nose and you're like, oh, I got to pick between the lesser of two evils, you might have thought that there's got to be a better way. Well, five states do think that, and they found the answer. It's open primaries and ranked voting. Now, could it work here in Wisconsin and across the country? Tracy Hunter from Voters First Wisconsin is here to talk about it. Tracy, thanks for being here. We appreciate the time. And again, it's an amazing concept, but before we get started, briefly, what is Voters First Wisconsin? What do you guys do?
Yes, thanks for having me, by the way. I'm excited to let people know more about this Final Five voting concept. Yeah, Voters First Wisconsin is a Wisconsin-based organization, all-volunteer, nonprofit, cross-partisan, bipartisan. We don't have any political leaning, and our goal is to create better election systems, actually to change things, not just to promote, you know, civics. So we have three different things we're working on. Today we're going to be talking about Final Five voting. We're also involved in the Money in Politics, which I heard your show yesterday. Thanks for that. And then also Fair Maps. We're doing a lot with Fair Maps.
So Brian alluded to the phrase, Washington isn't broken, it's working exactly as it was designed. So explain that to us, and what does that mean? You know, because he alluded to sometimes you just vote for the candidates that you have to because it's a lesser of two evils. But is that actually the purpose of our elections? Because we want to, obviously we'll get into how we make them better, but explain that phrase to us.
Sure. The problem that Final Five voting is trying to address is it has to do with how we do our primaries. And when primaries were introduced, it was actually for a good reason back during the progressive era. The two major parties have found out how to kind of use that to their advantage. And at this point, they have used the primaries, created a primary system that's a duopoly. It's a monopoly times two, right? They get to guarantee that they're the only ones that ever have a chance of winning. I can explain, you know, how that works. Take about 60 seconds at some point.
Yeah, do it.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, so let's talk about how the current system works. So today we have a primary election either in the spring or the summer. and the parties run those. And then we have a general election in the fall. In the primary election, the parties exert a great deal of control over who gets nominated. They get to direct the money. They get to direct the dark money. They get to direct, you know, who they nominate. And they almost always get their way. Also in primaries, only 10% of the voters, the eligible voters across the country, actually vote in primaries. So that's a very small segment that are picking the winners of the primaries. And they tend to be more partisan. You know, we all probably vote in primaries. That's a good sure. thing, but they tend to be more partisan. And then what happens? Then we usually get candidates picked from by the parties, and they advance to the general election. And that's when most people show up, two-thirds, usually in presidential elections. And often we look at the ballots for president or Congress or whatever, and it's, like you say, the lesser of two evils, and we say none of the above. And we say, why is the system broke? Well, they're controlling it to make sure that their partisan, very partisan candidates make it to the general election. And one more thing. If you talk about the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives, five out of six districts across the country are guaranteed to be won by one party or the other. Not necessarily due to gerrymandering, but just due to demographics. It's either going to be a blue or a red. So whoever wins the primary in that party is guaranteed victory. So 10% of the voters plus the dark money and the party leadership are picking, you know, 85%. Of the Congress. And that's why the number of bills they're getting done is going, it used to be around 700 or 800 50 years ago. Last year, there were less than 100.
Now, when did primaries become a weapon too? Because we never used to hear about primaried used as a verb, but now, you know, now we do. And that's another part of the issue. One is they're using it as an attack. And two, if you're an independent, you don't get to vote in primaries because you have to pick a side for your ballot if you were to go vote, which is another lesser of two evils things. If I want to vote in the primary and I'm an independent, I have to go in and either pick a Republican or a Democrat.
Yes, and I don't know when the idea of primarying an existing candidate to make sure that they don't get reelected came in, but it's been used for a while and it's been used a lot lately. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to highlight was both for candidates running for office, they know what they have to do in order to get elected, who they have to satisfy. It's that 10% plus 10%. The money. Right. If they make it in office, especially in Congress, they only have 2 years before the next election. They're really starting their reelection campaign immediately. And they know who they have to please to get reelected. So it makes total sense that they don't really care that much about their constituents because they don't need their constituents. They just need those others.
Yeah, those 10%.
Yep. A majority of the states, and first of all, we're talking with Tracy Hunter from the Voters from Voters First Wisconsin, votersfirstwi.org. A majority of states right now have those closed primaries, speaking of the independent voters. But there's only a handful of states right now that use fully open primaries. So how does that compare to what you're proposing with Final Five voting, Tracy?
Yeah, that's an important distinction. So let me explain how Final Five voting works.
Yes.
So it does have an open primaries concept, but that's not really what makes it effective. It also has a ranking component, but that isn't the same as ranked choice voting necessarily. It's just something that we use. So the way that Final Five voting works is there are two changes we would make to how we do elections. We would change the primary and we would change the general election. In the primary, we would no longer have a column for each party. Everybody would be on one single column, and all voters would get to pick one candidate, just like today, and it would be completely open. You don't have to designate, you know, that you're leaning left, leaning right, leaning independent or green or whatever. Everybody gets to pick one. Here's the important thing. Five candidates advance to the general election, not two, five, and you may very well get two from Team Red and two from Team Blue and independent. But they all move on. So now you have a competition in the general election for the best ideas. In fact, you have people from the same party competing for ideas. They don't just get to win because their party picked them. The other half then is what happens in the general election. Now we have five. There's no more guarantee that every party is going to be represented there. It's really the five most popular primary winners. Mm-hmm. And they have to compete all the way through the general election. And the voters use a ranking system there. So there's five there, and they get to pick their first choice, second, third, fourth, fifth. You don't have to vote for five, but it's to your advantage to do that. And in order to win in the general election, you need a majority. That's huge, because you know that whoever wins is favored by most people. So if somebody wins in the first round, great, we have our winner. If not, let's suppose somebody only got 40% and the rest were split up. Then what happens is the lowest vote getter candidate is removed, and their second place votes. Everybody that voted for that candidate that was removed, now we take their second choice. So their vote is still alive. It gets added to the other four, and we look again, do we have a winner? And you keep doing that until you have a majority winner.
Okay. And what if it gets down to, can there be a tie? I mean, I guess there could be between the final two. What would happen in that case?
It depends how the law is written, but that wouldn't be any different than what we have today, because conceptually today we could have, you know, a tie with.
So would it be an instant runoff, or would we have to do another full election? Because some places that are trying this are doing instant runoffs, which seem to make a little more sense, a little more cost effective.
Right. Another important question. It would be an instant runoff. And so it would be calculated. It would take, you know, seconds of processing, and it's auditable at every step. You know, if you're going to try and game this somehow in the software, sometimes you hear that criticism. Sure. It would have audit steps all the way through, and it would be audited, but it would be instantaneous. All of the voting systems, the tabulation machines in Wisconsin have the ability to support this ranking mechanism. They may have to do a software upgrade, but the software is available.
So there's a lot of people who argue that this would actually change how candidates campaign. And we've mentioned the dark money in politics. We've seen money flow into the state of Wisconsin. And in Alaska, who adopted a similar system back in 2022, even though they used the top four model, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Everything else is the same though.
Yep. We saw a lot more in Alaska, more door-to-door outreach, broader messaging. So why does this system encourage more of that grassroots effort than what we currently have with TV and social media and all of that?
Right. So in order to win, you need broad support. You can no longer just get that 10% plus the money. So that means you have to appeal to people across the spectrum. And in order to do that, you have to be going door to door. You have to be doing more local campaigning. Today, like in my district, they don't even campaign. It's almost scary.
We're having some technical issues.
So it opens up access to these candidates so that they have.
Are we going to lose Tracy here?
I think we might be losing Tracy. But I know one of the other things that,
Tracy's back. Okay,
all right.
Good.
So you're talking about getting out and campaigning. It also affects negative campaigns, because we all complain about the negative ads. Oh, all we see is negative ads. That changes, too, when you have this, because, as you mentioned, you may have two candidates who are Republican, two are Democrats, then you throw in an independent. You can't attack everybody.
Right. So the question, you know, is this going to help with the money and politics problem? We think it should. It's too early to tell. We don't have the data yet that supports that, but common sense would say, like you just brought up, if you're a big donor, today all you have to do is throw it into one pot. Now you have to spread it around. So number one, you may not be as excited about spreading it around if it's not effective. And number two, there's going to be less money going to those candidates, more visibility. And if you support both of from the same party, you know, they're going to be competing with each other. So, you know, that may be cut both ways for the money you donated.
I want to take a look back at Alaska because we were talking about that a little bit before the technical issues. And since they adopted a system similar to this, because this is kind of a test case, right? Alaska is. Have we seen signs that elected officials are working across the party lines more because of the way that they are voting in their elections?
Right. This is one of the most exciting things about the Alaska story. So one of the first things they did was they formed a bipartisan ruling coalition. So the way it works in every other state is whatever party's in control, they set the agenda for the whole session, right? They control everything. In Alaska, this final four system they have there encouraged so much cooperation that the extremists on both sides didn't want to participate. So what they did is they formed a coalition in the middle from both parties, and they set the agenda. And this is true both in their assembly and in their Senate. They've had a huge success there. They've They did election reform last year. Who's doing election reform, right? They had a balanced budget. They had a huge number of women that were encouraged to run and win. And in fact, their state senate has more females than males for the first time. The indigenous people there, which is a huge percentage of their population, feels much more represented. You know, just it looks like a win across the board.
So much so, Tracy, that after the election, there was a lawsuit that tried to ban it. It went to a referendum, and the citizens of Alaska went, "Nah, we like how this worked." And so they passed it, and so it stands. Tracy Hunter is with us. He's from Voters First Wisconsin. If you want to learn about Final Five voting, which sounds like a great idea to me, go to votersfirstwi.org, votersfirstwi.org, and learn about it, because once you start learning about it, it makes a lot of sense. Tracy, thanks for being here. Have a great weekend. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jamie and Brian.
It's like voting, actually working for the people. Crazy concept. 8:48 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan on the Civic.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 8:52 right now. We've made it through a Friday, and we want to leave things on a bit of a positive Wisconsin note today, right?
Yes. So we are premiering, or debuting, yes, we should say, Dairyland Diaries. So every Friday at this time, we are going to highlight some of the stories you might have missed from the week around the, just around the state. These are local Wisconsin stories focusing on real people and stories that we hope are going to give you a little emotional lift to send you off into the weekend, because, you know, we're dealing with a lot of stuff. Sometimes it's nice to have a feel-good story as we go. So Dairyland Diaries is our
and maybe
cry.
Educate you a little bit on the state you live in, right? We get in our bubbles, and so it's nice to get outside and know other places are doing some really cool things, too, and there's other great people.
And let's start in Wausau. This is coming off the heels of the Olympics. We have the Paralympics coming up, and Matt Toombs is a lifetime Wisconsin resident from the Wausau area. He played for Team USA's wheelchair curling team in 2022 in Beijing at the Winter Paralympics. He's heading to Cortina, Italy, to participate in this year's games, which are happening March 6th through the 15th. He recently did an interview with WPR, and he said, while the venues for the Paralympic Games may be enormous compared to his local place, the game is exactly the same. He is the skip for the wheelchair curling team, so he's essentially the captain. It's his job to strategize how the team are going to throw its rocks, not a euphemism, and and he usually throws the final two in the match. So he discovered curling at the Wausau Curling Club, because they were offering a little clinic on come learn to hurl. And so he and his wife went down there. Hurling is the Irish game, and to hurl is another verb altogether. So they go down, he and his wife, and at first the people at the center weren't sure how to do it with a person in a wheelchair, but they figured it all out, and they did some experimentation, and he was hooked, and he said between the Olympic and Paralympic curling, there's not too many differences. They use sweepers to help guide the rock in the Olympics. In the wheelchair curling, there's no sweeping. It's just however much weight and the line that you put on the rock. And once you let go, it's all in there. So good luck to Matt Toombs as he heads to Italy with the Paralympic Games in curling.
That's super exciting. So congratulations to him. I hope he brings home a medal. We also have Burger Fest. Come on now. Who doesn't love a good Burger Fest? It's going to take place in Seymour, but it's actually moving from its traditional August spot to September of this year. The city's annual celebration as the home of the burger will be on September 19th. I feel like I need to go check out something that calls themselves a place that calls themselves the home of the burger.
Did you know that Seymour was the home of the burger?
I did not know Seymour. I'll be honest. I'm not a Wisconsin native, so somebody'd have to tell me even where Seymour is actually at. I want to learn on this show too.
All right.
According to a February 22nd announcement on the Home of the Burger Facebook page, which now I definitely have to go check out, they say this year we're building something even bigger, more fun, and more community focused than ever. So there's been plans for incorporating a fall festival type activity into all of this. This is the 36th annual event, by the way. There's a harvest-style farmer's market, pumpkins for the kiddos and adults, bobbing for apples, and a lot of other fall family activities. And if you visit, you can expect a little involvement from some vendors, some local businesses. There's also live music, some expanded beer selections. And, the festival has also confirmed the ketchup slide will be back. When someone asked in the Facebook
comments, wondering about that.
I do not know. What is a ketchup slide? Because I think I need to know.
I think it's self-explanatory.
Do I slide in ketchup? Is it like a slip and slide in ketchup?
That's what it sounds like. Or one of those big, the big slides that you get on like the mats.
Yeah. Okay. I'm always up for a fun slide.
Seymour, Jamie, is just west of Green Bay, a little west. So it's Green Bay, then you get to Oneida, and then you get to Seymour.
Oh, okay. I know exactly where that's
at. If you go to
Black
Creek, you got too far.
Okay.
You went too far. Turn around, go back, look for the ketchup slide, and you'll be
right, and the big sign that I'm sure says Home of the Burger.
I would imagine,
I would imagine so, yes.
As I'm seeing this. So that'll be fun. Now, we both saw this story, and this is another good story.
This is great.
It comes to you from Green Bay. A mother and daughter have raised over $20,000 to open a Puerto Rican food business as a recent TikTok video went viral because, Jamie, as you can imagine, big government and big regulation tried to stomp out a dream.
Yes, absolutely. The mom and daughter are Rebecca and Judy Valentin. They launched a cafe on February 1st from the community center inside the fort at the rail yard in Green Bay, where they are residents. Just a couple of hours after starting to sell their empanadas, though, some neighbors called the police, who shut them down for not having proper licensing.
Come on, Karen. Just enjoy an empanada and a quesito.
Have a good time. A retail food license or food processing plant license is required to make and sell food items in public, according to the Wisconsin Food Processing, blah, blah, blah. Right. Rebecca said she thought the LLC creation and the Serve Safe certification, which certifies food service professionals, was enough to start selling their food. And then a guy got hold of this on social media, Brian.
Yeah, Jake Freeman did a little TikTok video. He sent it out, and people were not happy. So Jake started a GoFundMe campaign with a $20,000 goal. As of the 15th, they had reached that goal. They got $20,000, $410,000. So now they're going to use that money to get permits and to buy a small food truck.
Love
or they're going to rent out a building with the community kitchen, and it will serve authentic Puerto Rican fried snacks, including empanadas. They'll sell pastries, including pastelitos, which is a small version of an empanada with sweet filling. So good for them. Mm-hmm. This is that's a nice story, and it's entrepreneurial, and it's people helping people.
I love that.
It's wonderful. Yeah, so that's Dairyland Diaries. We'll do it every Friday just to leave on a happy note because God knows, man, we're beaten down all week, so we might as well leave happy on a Friday.
We do have to leave happy, and today we've talked about food. We've talked about a giant ketchup slide and a potential curling champion. I mean, what more could you ask for on a Friday?
That's upbeat, Jamie. If that doesn't put the sunshine in your daybreak, I don't know what does.
It absolutely should.
I'm going to punch myself in the face because that's...
now you're too happy. What is this?
Excuse me. Yeah, now I'm too happy. I'm going to go to see my wife. She's going to go, what happened? Are you drunk? Not yet, baby, but it's Friday.
And it's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. Thank you for being with us all week. We appreciate you listening. Tell your friends. Follow us on socials. I got nothing else, Jamie.
It's a Civic Media Network.
Bye.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.